All right, we're back from Miami. The club going up on a Tuesday. We'll catch in on how Andy enjoyed his time in Miami. We got Clay here. We're going to talk a little hoops, preview the Week 15 DFS slate. We also have a ton of playoff best ball contests. They're now in the lobby. Maybe we'll rip a few of those. It's the club, a little hodgepodge on Underdog today. Let's do it. All right, we got Clay, we got Andy. How are we doing? Andy, when did you get back from Miami?
Not till late last night. Our flight was delayed a while. And so got back to our place probably at like 11 p.m. last night.
Okay. Yeah. And
Clay? Your flight was out on Sunday, right? When did you get back?
Yeah. My flight was, I mean, I did it strategically. I didn't want to stay in the night in Miami Sunday night, but I also wanted to make sure I was there for the end of the games. And when, you know, the champion was crowned, I thought I had booked my flight with enough time. Those games went later than they normally do.
Yeah, they did.
Like, holy cow. So I'm like trying to time it. Ended up getting to the airport like 10 minutes before my flight boarded. But I got to see the our champion get crowned and all that good stuff. So barely pulled it off.
Did you bait your flight in time?
Yeah, barely. And I'm not one of those people. You know how some people are kind of like loosey-goosey with how they get to the airport? I'm not wired like that. I'm also not the person that gets there hella early, but I'm just like, you know, the standard, give me the 75 to 90 minutes, get me there on, like, that's who I am. And so I was very much stressing it a little bit, but we did it. I had to see our guy Keurig take down the prize, drink out of the dog bowl cup, all that good stuff. Andy, you came down, you were there for our Basel stuff, swung by the dog bowl both days. I even got to meet your business partner. Everyone knows him, D's. That was a super fun time too.
Yeah, I'm glad D's was able to make it. It was super fun. I mean, Underdog just like totally crushed that event. It was a really good time. The venue was really nice. It was nice. We got to like sit outside the whole time. It was fun. Had a good time, no complaints. Hopefully next year I'm playing in it, not just watching, but
yeah,
I enjoyed it.
I obviously, don't get me wrong, I was trying to get in there. I very much would have rather have been drafting, but I will say it made Sunday more enjoyable. Saturday would have been way more fun to be drafting, but getting to kind of sweat along with everyone, like by the end of the day, you kind of had everyone's teams memorized. So you're high-fiving someone here when this happens and vice versa. And that element was a lot of fun for me, as opposed to if I was the one that had my dog shit team that wasn't doing well and I'm just kind of frustrated in the corner. It was nice to get to enjoy everything for all the finalists.
Yeah, totally. That was definitely my cope. I was watching the Badge Bros a little bit earlier today and John was talking about that, and I feel like I definitely felt that, where like I just had a very chill time. It was just awesome to get to meet people. Didn't really care, you know, I wanted to see a friend win, but I wasn't desperately hoping for anything to happen. And so it was nice to just hang out, vibe, have some drinks, have some food.
Yeah. It is kind of a distorting thing, because I think we all probably take for granted, right? 99.9% of our sweats are all just in person or at home by ourselves in the comfort of our own home. You can kind of be a lunatic if you want to. No one's going to see you jumping around your living room in your underwear or whatever. But here you're in this party setting. Some people are happy. Some people are upset. Some people want to play it close to the vest. Some people are, you know, celebrating every single Brock Purdy pass. You know, it's just a wide spectrum. And depending on, I think, your disposition and your personality, that can either be very fun or also a tough, you know, dynamic to navigate.
I had major FOMO from afar, but it looked amazing. I'm really excited to see some more of the content roll out from Underdog about the event. Like, I completely understood like why they elected and not like live stream the drafts and stuff, but as you know, for people who weren't there, I think that would have been really entertaining to watch and see go down. And then
they had a couple of videographers and stuff, which is nice.
Yeah. The event looked amazing. And like, I've done a lot of events over my career for a variety of like work and client purposes and stuff. And like a lot of the details are just seem like they nailed. And I love that stuff. I really am into like the branding and just like the little touch points. And that's something they've excelled at for a while now. And it's cool to just see like where they're at in this point of their company, trajectory, to really pull off an event like that.
Yeah, one cool thing they did, you guys might have seen it on Twitter, but they printed out, you know, like pretty big cardboard cutouts of everyone's winning drafts that qualified them there.
Yeah,
and then had them on like the easel stands throughout the venue, and people were getting to take photos with their winning lineups and stuff like that. It was fun. The bar to this place called Grails, they have this like sneakerhead theme, and then they have like this red carpet and then all of these, you know, custom shoes on display. So then they just dropped the lineups there. And so they were literally on a red carpet, all of these lineups.
It was perfect.
It was,
I was really wondering what that was.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw the sneakers behind it. I was trying to figure that out with the venue. I knew that wasn't something they brought in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the whole theme. And like, it wasn't for our party, but I think if you just go there, otherwise you can like order cocktails out of these shoes or whatnot. Yeah. They're ceramic or whatever, but it was so fun.
I love the trophy being like a dog bowl.
Oh yeah. That was, and John took a nice big gulp after that. It was fun though, too, to see those old lineups, right? Because you realize just how topsy-turvy roller coaster this season has been. And you're seeing all these players that are no longer relevant, or players who, you know, put up a low score to win someone. And it was a nice stroll through the season's memory lane there.
Yeah, it was definitely fun. It made me excited for next year. And just, I think that it was also really nice because I feel like the underdog community, comparatively to other DFS platforms, it's a little bit more like wholesome in the sense that like you're not trying to hide some maximally like extractable value thing. You're all in drafts together. You can see what people are doing. It's not like a secret. And so I think that like lends itself to people being a little bit more friendly and shooting the shit, talking strategy. It was just really fun to see a bunch of people together who have been like talking on Discords and Telegram chats for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So where did the drafts take place actually?
At that bar.
At that bar? Just on Saturday the day before. So they had it run out for the whole weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. They had
like
an
area
for
drafting and then area for like hanging out. Cause that's what I heard. They were like going to separate people into the groups for the drafts. How that play out?
When you weren't, the area where they drafted ended up being the area where everyone was kind of sweating the games too. But if you weren't drafting at the time, they took you out into another room to ensure that you couldn't see that. Which I think it ended up working out pretty well. And I completely understand. I mean, you can talk to Sacrilegious, you know, he was saying too, like how big of an edge in the way he would have played things if he was able to see multiple draft boards. I do think they did that right. Making sure that those were kind of self-contained, because otherwise the only fair way to do it, I was kind of joking that it was like, you know, when a poker tournament gets near the bubble and they go hand for hand at each table to make sure that everyone's getting it. You'd basically have to do it that way. You'd have to go like pick by pick, like 101 here, 101 here, which would have been a little cumbersome. What I told them though, what I want them to do for next year, because this year they were just doing it on their laptops, the exact same setup as any other 12 person draft, 30 second clocks. I want them to replicate like the sticker board, and you get a board printed that looks like an underdog draft board with the underdog stickers. And then guys get to go up and put their sticker on the board. I'm like, if we're going to do this live final thing, let's actually embrace getting to do it in person.
That's a good idea. I didn't even think about that. That would have been nice.
And you get them going up there cruising.
I think it'd be interesting too. Like, I mean, I know there's a ton of like dynamics at play and reasons to have it the way they had it this year, but like if they had a scenario where it was like you could only win one seat, for example, like what would their thoughts would be in terms of like making that a little bit more like equitable to the field as a whole? Because it definitely was an advantage, and like shout out to the people who won, you know, two seats. Like that definitely was an edge in some regards to get to see the board first, but also it maybe make it more conducive to have like all three drafts or however many drafts go at one time, and then you could like live stream like all the drafts for the more of the like the people who aren't there. Like the viewing experience could be like more from afar and then not take away from like the gameplay elements as well. But I mean, that's obviously a give or take.
The thing is there's still value, even if you only have one seat, in knowing the results of the previous drafts. Like if you're in the third draft, having two sets of data points for what happened is still pretty valuable. The other thing about it too, is a lot of the guys who win seats, those guys were max entering or close to max entering a lot of future weeks. That's so good for just the overall ecosystem. Yeah. Like if you remove some of those hardcore drafters, it's harder to fill those. So totally. I see.
Yeah. If every time someone qualified, they didn't enter anymore, that would, it would have made it tougher to fill those contests.
Yeah. I get that point. Yeah. I just mean like live streaming all like having all the drafts go off like at the same time would be pretty cool, because then it would remove the advantage of seeing a different draft board, because if it went like, you know, succinctly and somebody was like watching the stream before going to draft, like, you know, obviously that wouldn't play out well. But yeah
like I would have liked
that too.
I mean, we were all essentially doing live commentary on the drafts. I would have loved to have been able to stream that, you know, be like, holy cow, you know, who was it? Like DJ Moore just went, or Justin Fields just went at 106 or whatever. And, or Zach Moss just went at 105, like getting to break those down in real time would have been very fun.
Yeah. And it was interesting. I saw Copper's, you know, comment out here. It was interesting. Like, you know, obviously you play this weekend out many, many times, but the fact that like, you know, no one with two seats did just like win the whole thing, I think is compelling and interesting at the very least. Like,
yeah. And I mean, you know, some of it is like, it was interesting seeing how all three of the multi-seaters approached it, because EDN, who I met, also just a badass, brought his mom as his plus one. He took Josh Allen in both of his drafts, you know, no diversity. You know, Copper kind of took the polarized approach. In one draft, he waited until the last round, grabbed Josh Dobbs, and the other draft took Josh Allen early. So kind of played it both ways, but EDN just like ripping it in. Like, I'm either going to, you know, be at the very top or the very bottom.
That's sick.
Any other takeaways for you, Andy, from the weekend there, other than now desperately wanting to get a seat in the 2024 Dog Bowl?
No, I think we generally covered it. Nothing else too much. I'll just say, you know, it was just really fun. I think Underdog did just a really good job. And I'm excited. I think that this is going to allow them, with all the footage they got and everything, and just like the hype around that in-person event, I think they're going to be able to do it really big next year if they want to. And that's going to be awesome.
And I think, you know, I mentioned this on my portfolio review show yesterday, but the other thing I loved about it is how polarized even the demographic was, because you think about, at one point I was joking that the Dog Bowl felt a little like the Deposit Kingdom Bowl, like every week another Deposit Kingdom, and you have the sickos, you even have Beretta James there, one of the highest volume drafters on Underdog. But then you're talking to people like literally this college kid I met, who literally drafted one time, his friend got him on to do some pick'ems, got drunk with $25 left in his account, won a seat, and now he's like Underdog pilled. He's all excited to do more. And there were guys like that. You just one bullet and they got there. And the fact that you could still have what, like 90% of the people who were registering for that being sickos, but that the 10% crew could still get what, collectively 5-6 entries in there, I think makes it so fun.
Yeah, there was way more than I thought there would be.
Yeah.
Like there were multiple guys I talked to who were like, oh yeah, I just had a couple entries, got lucky.
Yeah. And the whole thing is too, is like, you know, we have these sickos there, like half the field's building their own projection sets for this contest. And then I'm asking the dude from Auburn, and I was like, what did you do? Did you set some rankings? Like, I just printed off the weekly rankings on ESPN. For this week, was just drafted off of that. He was he's a big Carolina Panthers fan. He took Jonathan Mingo with his last pick. It's like, you know, just another day, just ripping the draft.
I got to text my cousin who's a sophomore at Auburn and just be like, yo, this is so random because it's a big ass school, but like, do you know this person by chance?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm excited to see what they can do with it next year. Very, I thought, successful pilot version of a live final. I think there's so much more they can do to blow it out as well. We also, we have a lot we can discuss today. The other big one, the hot topic on Twitter, best ball mania, all of our best ball contests, regular season have come to a close. Everyone's seeing their advance rates here. How are you guys enjoying how the playoffs are setting up for you here? How many teams did you guys get through?
Not too bad. I wanted to get a little bit more than I did. Kind of fluctuated over the last couple of weeks. I got up to the low 40s of teams advancing. I ended up with 35 teams advancing, which I'm pretty happy with. So it's like a little over 23% advance rate. I've also finished with six teams in the top 10,000, which I think is pretty solid. Yeah. And so I feel pretty good. I have a couple teams that feel really strong. That top team that I have, I think is pretty nice. Both of my top couple all seem pretty strong. This one I love. It's a crazy Cowboys stack with Jahmyr Gibbs and Bijan. Zeke's coming in well here. Evan Ingram's been playing really well. So I like this team.
This team is hot. Yeah. And man,
yeah, if Tank Dell was healthy.
You had Tank still? Holy cow.
Yeah. So yeah, I like that team a lot. Funny enough, the contest on Underdog that I had the best advance rate versus expectation in was the Undercat, the one where you could only draft cat or bird teams. I had 50% of my team's advance. Apparently, I was just very good at the Undercat.
But, that's so funny. Yeah, I think one of my my top team, I think I told you guys, was drafted on the club. It was my sixth draft. It must have been, had to have been, what, early May for my sixth draft here. But this one, going back to the club, and I was looking, I'll need to do a final tally, but I want to say I had four or so club drafts that were advancing as part of my set, which we didn't do a ton of Best Ball Mania drafts on the club either. No. There was something about our rooms, apparently.
Yeah, it was,
I've already shown this one on Portfolio Review.
This is a nice team.
Yeah.
I'll say that was a soft action there. Help you advance through extra teams. No, I finished with 20% advance rate. So I'll take that, especially with my smaller sample size. I mean, that's a I love the conversation on Twitter days. Like every single person out here has a higher than expected advance rate. It's also, I think anyone posting is probably posting about how they had a higher than advanced success.
That's called selection bias right yes, there. Yeah.
100%. So I'll take it. I mean, like, no teams in the top 10,000, but snuck some through, and some of my teams that are getting through are fairly healthy. So knock on wood, you know, anything's possible at this stage is what I got to remind myself. I had, you know, enough advanced last season too, had some that I thought were great, and then they all pretty much flopped in the first round of the playoffs. So let's see how it plays out.
Yeah.
We pulling heavy for Lamar this weekend.
Yeah, what I've been looking at now has been trying to go through my advancing teams that have some unique players who I think could bring me through. Like whether it's Justin Jefferson. I don't have any Justin Jefferson teams that made it. But I do have like a couple Cooper Kupp teams, Jonathan Taylor teams if they can sneak through another week, guys like that where spent high draft capital and haven't gotten very much from them this year so far. I think those are going to be the big kind of things to be looking for in your teams if you're trying to, you know, give yourself some hopium. Because like someone said in the chat, you know, having a Cowboys Detroit stack for week 17, you and everybody else who advanced also has that.
Yeah. Not to mention the way the Lions have been playing. I'm like, they might just get boat raced by the Cowboys and that's not even a fun shootout game. I was like the other kind of elephant in the room when, you know, we all like talking about the advance rate stuff, but I mean, health really is the biggest story right now. David here, DSP41501 on Twitter, posted this and like looking at how many players based on ADP are gone. No Joe Burrow, no Deshaun Watson, no Anthony Richardson, no Daniel Jones, no Kirk Cousins, no Aaron Rodgers, no Ryan Tannehill, no Jimmy G. It's just been a disaster. CJ Stroud, who knows what's going to happen with him. But like when you literally eliminate like a third of the quarterbacks, I do think it's hard to draw like really sweeping conclusions from that when you're really just trying to hit the right combos of healthy QBs at this point.
Yeah.
It's total chaos though. And like on a personal portfolio thing, like one of the things my takeaways has been is like, I was pretty bad at drafting wide receivers on even these advancing teams. Like my running back rooms is like, I had some good selections, especially in the later rounds running back wise, that definitely vaulted some of these teams to advance. And then there's so many landmines in like the middle and late round wide receivers. And like, so like the Houston, like I had a bad read on the Texans situation, all those things. But that's the fun about these teams, right? I think this year in particular is these injury situations. It is a chaotic playoffs. For these like next 3 weeks, like, and I think it's completely wide open. It's not, you can't look at any roster really, and aside from maybe the guy that's, you know, advancing 70% of his teams and it's all Cowboys stuff, like he's maybe in a pretty good position because they're pretty healthy for like his portfolio. But it is the wild wild west out there.
I would say that I have lots of takeaways from this Best Ball Mania season and things I want to do differently and things I need to improve on. One that's been in my head lately is being willing to do even more mega team onslaughts. Like I'm looking through my teams and I have a lot of, you know, like Dak Prescott double stacks or, you know, stuff like that. And I'm like, I wish I would have been willing to rip it in on more of those guys, because I think I get in my head about the playoff advancement stuff and being like, it's so hard, you're going to need this team to drop 30 every week. And then it's like, well, the Niners do drop 30 every week. The Cowboys do drop 30 every week. And you can ping pong those guys anyways. You can have the Brandon Cooks week. You can have the Michael Gallup week. And I feel underweight onslaughts of these top teams in a way that I think could have been avoided. And I think it's going to be very optimal to have teams built around some of these juggernauts. Like if I had teams built around the Ravens, the Niners, and the Cowboys right now, like 4+ players, I would be very excited about those teams.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah, totally. I'm also curious, like I think kind of alongside that, like I'm curious to see how some of like the teams that have two running backs from the same team fare. Like we've just seen a ton of like split backfields kind of come up over the last couple weeks, especially with like, I mean, no one has what's his name on the fucking Ravens, Keaton Mitchell.
Oh, yeah.
Does anyone even have him?
Let's see. Also, shout out as always to our guy Patrick Donovan, the man behind bbmdb.com. Super fun place to go scope all of this stuff out. Let's see, was he? I don't know why this isn't loading here.
But like, I have a couple of, like Kenneth Walker and Charbonnet teams, which I like feel better about now than I did. And I think like this week playing the Eagles could actually be like a pretty nice situation. I have a couple of, like Mostert and HN teams. I even actually had a couple Madison Ty Chandler. I have a lot of Ty Chandler actually that made it into the playoffs, which is exciting. He's like one of the rookie running backs I was drafting a lot that I held out hope for that finally hit. But yeah, just as I was looking through my advancing teams, like I'm not, you know, breaking news to anyone here, but all my teams that are the strongest were zero RB teams.
Yeah.
Where it's like, maybe I drafted one running back early, but like the teams that really look like they have legs have Kyren Williams and Mostert and, you know, Ty Chandler and guys like that.
Not a ton of Keaton Mitchell. I mean, you want to talk about a leverage thing here. Only 16 Keaton Mitchell teams advancing.
Wow.
That's a pretty nice piece to have, I think.
Yeah. No kidding. I think too, like to your point, Peter, what you're just saying about the overstacking is like something I want to try to like, you know, get some more. I probably won't be able to do this research myself, but I imagine very intelligent people in our community will dive into some of the micro here is like the advantages of taking like the third wide receiver on a team that we expect to be very dominant, like the Cowboys, for example, or versus like the number two wide receiver on like a shittier team, and like being more willing to take like players on these like super, you know, super teams later in drafts than going for like a wide player position one or two player on a shittier team. And like some of those dynamics, I feel like I wasn't I wasn't clicking, you know, Brandon Cooks a lot, you know, in these drafts. And now I'm like, well, that would have been a great player to have. I wasn't clicking, you know, a lot of the 49ers guys because I was just like, well, they're going to cancel each other out. So like, I'll take X player from shittier team. And, you know, I think that was one of my leaks this year was not being as willing to kind of jump on just good players that are going to be out there on the field for the really good teams.
The also, I just did a query for Raheem Mostert, Devon Achane. 3,043 Achane Mostert teams, collectively 61.2% advance rate. Look at how many of these teams in the top 100, guys. 2, 11, that's 12, nuts. 14, 16, holy 18, 20. I don't even have time to read them all. Like, this was the regular season skeleton key was putting these two on your teams. Holy shit.
Look, man, handcucking your RBs works. That's my takeaway there.
Yeah. I think I do want to talk about that thing about the handcucking in that I think, you know, initially when the handcucking stuff was when the league had really not quite devolved into all of these timeshares and specialty type backs and different roles, right? Like it used to be the era of you had the starting running back and then the clear cut backup. You know, you had Austin Eckler and then behind him was Justin Jackson or whatever. And it was all Austin Eckler. And if he got hurt, then Justin Jackson got it. And in those, it did really make sense that you want to bet on your guy being healthy. I still even think in like the Eli Mitchell relative to CMC stuff. But now that you have so many of these backfields that are so fluid with how they deploy them, the Bears, you know, being another example right now, where you're making a correlated bet on the offense I think makes so much sense. And obviously what we said, like price really matters with this stuff. But when we look at how many committee backfields were going cheap, you know, the Commanders were a good one. Like if you spent a pick, and I know he's cooled off a little bit, but if you spent two picks on Antonio Gibson and Brian Robinson, you're happy with what you're getting from Brian Robinson this year, even at the cost of those two picks.
Yeah.
Also, the other thing I would say, I see Charlie pushing back on wanting to onslaught teams. I really disagree, specifically this year too, with how, and maybe it is partially due to how the injuries and stuff have shook out. But when, you know, I talk with JM on the Friday DFS shows, and it's like, there are only a couple of guys on each slate now who can go for 30 points. Like, I still want to be concentrated around those teams that have the potential to put up those monster slates. And I'm telling you, like, this year with how many, like, low 35-point totals we have on these, like, if you're just concentrated on the two teams that can consistently churn out 30-point producers, you will separate from the field. I think the perfection element is overstated with how these pods work. You need to be perfect on a given week to advance, but I don't think that you need to be perfect, you know, for the whole thing, if that makes sense.
What do you think is a player, right, like the least advancing player? Because I know we just looked up like Keaton Mitchell, and that was pretty low.
Yeah, I think Jefferson is the least Justin advancing Jefferson. Player who was regularly drafted.
He, even of guys that are like injured and not playing anymore and done for the season, he was still 5.8%.
Wow.
Yeah. Man, shout out to these teams who finished in 80th place with a Justin Jefferson roster. That is an incredible feat there.
That is nuts. But I don't even know if he's going to play again, right? I mean, especially now after, like, I mean, that's some of the conversation this week is like, he came back. People are already saying that maybe he shouldn't come back. He comes back. He gets thrown the literal hospital ball. And at this point, like, what is it? And he's in the contract year, right? Or something like that, I believe. Yeah. Like, so I'll be interesting if he even like is in play the next 3 weeks.
Who, if you guys could have like a stack or a couple players from a team or still like a week 17, like what would be your ideal combo to have now? As if everything that's already happened does not matter. You're just talking about these next 3 weeks. What would be something you'd want?
I need to look at the schedule for that one. Let me see.
Yeah.
So I mean, the Rams play the Commanders this week, right?
Yeah.
So not looking past this week, I mean, I think like some Cup and Puka and Stafford teams are like very interesting for like just advancing to week 16.
Yeah.
I don't know how the rest of their runout is, and that's been kind of like a scary proposition so far this season. But I think, the Cup teams, it's only 7% advance rate, so not much higher than Jefferson.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting to me, is something like that. I also like, I mean, I drafted a shit ton of Likely, and I hate that it came at the expense of Mark Andrews that we're getting usable weeks from him now, but it's at a great time of year if you still have like Likely on a team or something like that, because I imagine you also have some other tight end talent that could be around as well. So those are two things I'm kind of interested in.
I just pulled up Rashi Rice, a guy who's, you know, 19% of teams, but man, his role has really jumped. It's basically like, you know, who are the players who their role or, you know, what they're doing now is not reflective of their advance rate, I think is probably a better way to put it.
Yeah. I do think Ty Chandler could potentially be one of them, depending on Alexander Madison's ankle injury. I think Zach Moss could be another one where he, you know, has been, his like usage numbers and everything have been really good. We don't know what Jonathan Taylor's timeline to return is. There's a world where, you know, he's underperformed so far, but he could end up really blowing up these last couple of weeks.
Yep. Yeah.
Kyle Pitts. I'll fall in the category, right? Like, I mean, he got a touchdown last week, you know?
The problem is, trust me, I try to defend Kyle Pitts whenever I can. I mean, last week was the most perfect setup for them. You get them at home in the dome versus a pass funnel in the box.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see that trending. Although I do think Bijan is a good one because things are trending really well. And if you think about the first round, and let's even say stuff's going on with Tyreek, I know he's officially listed day to day now, but with question marks around all those guys, Cup, Jefferson, Chase, Austin Eckler, like you can go down the line. All of a sudden, Bijan Robinson went from looking like the shakiest of the first round bets, you know, relative to AJ Brown, Diggs, he now looks like one of the guys you'd be most excited to have as your first round pick. 10.3% advance rate for him there too.
Not quite the same, but like, what's your take on, like, you know, how'd you feel about Bills players right now with like the Kincaid injury, like Knox back in the fold to some degree, you know, Davis just put up a goose egg on a time where you would think he would get some work in a game like that. And with the tight end situation a little bit under flux, like, I don't know. I don't know how to feel about, I mean, you gotta be pumped if you have Allen on a team that's live, because he has to cook, but James Cook is the real cook there.
Let's play a game. Not quite Lawton thinks. I'm going to type in the Giga stack here. Josh Allen, Diggs, Gabe Davis, James Cook. How many teams do you think will be advancing with these four players when I press refresh here?
Percentage or number?
Let's do just raw number of teams that are advancing with these four.
Wow.
500.
I'll max bet the under on that. I just think the combo of these guys getting here just with
I don't even know how many teams have those four. I'm gonna say it's like 10. I think it's low.
I was gonna say like 15. Okay, 195. So it was right in between where we were. 195 have this out of 653. 30% advance rate for the Josh Allen Giga stack. And no Chess Liam to be found in here. What a fraud.
There he is.
We found one. I knew I'd find one.
I mean, I'm shocked that there was that many teams that even had those. I mean, I guess if you're building a Bills onslaught, you're taking those four players, but I'm kind of shocked that it was both the wide receivers and the running back together. I would have thought it would be more of like a one wide receiver running back or with a tight end, one of the tight ends in there, but that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Let's do another one of those. That's kind of fun, Pete.
Let's do a Niners one, because that one's pretty fun right now. Like, if you have, because you could have gotten, you could have gotten Christian McCaffrey. Was Debo swinging back ever?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Debo was like third round, right? A lot of the, you could have reached for him at the 2-3 turn, or maybe he fell.
Let's see if anyone has this one. Just the full blown. CMC, Debo, Ayuk, Purdy, Kittle. This one has to be a lot less.
Pete, if you were really craving more streaming hours, you could do a whole stream.
That's wow. And so if you got it, it was just like
prices.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Look at this advance rate. 76.9%. If you just took CMC, Debo, Ayuk, George Kittle, and Brock Purdy. Easy game.
I mean, who cares what the rest of your team looks like? If you have those five, like, you're going to feel pretty good about your chances these next 3 weeks, I would say. Like,
yeah,
they have a great run out. I saw the chat mentioned it earlier, but it's like,
well,
Washington week 17, and they play Arizona this week. I don't know who their week 16 matchup is, but that's, don't hate it.
So yeah. I'm really curious what happens to the advance rate if you drop the McCaffrey requirement. Mm. I think that's really interesting.
That is.
Because you probably had a landmine in the first round, or more likely than not.
It drops it about 23%, but that's still really good. Oh, there's our guy Crutches there with one of these teams here.
Oh, let's go.
Let's see who his first round pick is. First round pick, CeeDee Lamb, and has the background. This is a sick team.
That is a beautiful team. And Sam Howell? Hey.
Yeah. His
late round RBs on that team were crazy too. It was Jalen Warren, Mostert, and someone else who is getting minutes or carries.
I'm gonna go. Yeah, let's see.
What about Cooks?
A.T. Perry. Yeah, I'll. I guess Cooks would be the full giga there. Wait, is that?
Yeah, because he had a couple. He had like a 27 point week. He had some.
So similar to that, to the Niners one without CMC, 298 out of 526 teams advancing with CeeDee Lamb, Tony Pollard, Dak Prescott, Jake Ferguson. Do you know what's the flip side of this? Of thinking of the teams that hit on these giga stacks, it didn't advance them. I was like, what were you doing with your other picks?
That's impressive. Can you scroll down to the very last team who had this? Wait. Okay, so there wasn't like a bottom of the barrel.
Why is there some that are like not yellow there? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it just isn't loading all of them.
Oh, no, because there's three. They're third in the pod, so there's high enough score. Oh, okay, I see now. They got in a bad pod. That's pretty crazy.
Jeez. Let's see if anyone tacked on Brandon Cooks to this. The real Giga Sicko.
Yeah, it's so whatever that dude's name with a 70% advance rate.
Yeah, 102 out of 190 there. Lemmings, that's a guy from our ship chasing Discord there. Did the full onslaught. I could really go down this rabbit hole forever.
Yeah.
So here, hold on. I'm doing an opposite one on my end, which is how many teams had Mac Jones, Hunter Henry, Ramondre, and Juju Smith-Schuster.
If you subbed out Juju Smith-Schuster for Tyquan, I would be showing up in some of those.
So it had an 11.5% advance rate. 22 teams advanced with that combo.
It's disgusting.
Oh my god.
They deserve some kind of a prize for just advancing with those players. Being honest here.
Jesus.
Pete, real quick, I know we gotta like move on to other stuff, but if you were to say, do you think there's any like actionable takeaways from this in terms of like, I think it's in some respects we could have like looking back, it's like, yes, of course the Niners crushed the season, yes, the Cowboys crushed the season, but that's like not super predictable going into a draft year and draft season, right? So is it like, are you going to be trying to identify the teams that are like more likely than not to have a chance of like a really strong season, a playoff run, or are you going to say just like, I'm going to overstack on viable offenses? Are you going to get like offensive coordinator meta? Like, how are you approaching some of these? Like,
well, this, not to belabor like the Giga Stack thing, because I think the counter to it generally is how the gauntlet playoffs work and having to finish 1-16 and all of that. But with the addition of the regular season prizes, and you see like how many of those most are A-chan teams were in top 100, not top 10,000, top 100. I do think that idea of really leaning into correlation, because when you spread that out over the course of 14 weeks, you can build some really incredible teams that even if they have slight negative EV, you know, compared to the teams that are going to hit more of an 18 leg parlay in the playoffs, that is massively offset by winning 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 in these regular season prizes. Like, there's a lot of people with these Giga Stacks who not only are free rolling this year of BBM, they are going to be free rolling multiple years of BBM maxing because of those concentrated bets on the league winning teams. And so I do think the regular season EV, even though when we talked about it, it was hard, like, how do you actually optimize for this and stuff? But I do think as I talk it out, like the Giga Stacking, multiple backs on high powered teams, whatever kind of correlation angle you want to lean into, I see a lot of value in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm excited. I think one, it's a great combo off season.
Yeah, totally. As I'm looking into all these combos now that I think could be kind of fun for the playoffs, one that I think is fun, which only had a 10% advance rate, is Mahomes, Kelsey, and Rashee Rice. Wow. I think that could be a really, really strong combo. There's one of that threesome in the top 1,000.
Do you guys know, I haven't actually seen it. Do we know Pacheco's injury? Is he expected to be back? Because to me, that's what makes that so exciting. If they're having an identity shift without Pacheco.
Oh, he missed IR, which is a good sign, but I didn't get the sense that he's just necessarily automatically back this week. It felt like somewhere in between. Cause once you started, like, there was like the IR conversation lingering out there after he was ruled out this week. So it seemed like not bad enough to get put on IR, not good enough that obviously he didn't play this past week and is probably out for multiple weeks. So,
because I really, as good as I think Rashee Rice is, I think they just had their hand forced by not having Pacheco. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we have to pass more. We're going to have more, you know, up-tempo, drives. And they finally get Rashee Rice up to an 80% route share. And it's like, yeah, no shit. He cooks, because his targets per route run this entire year have been phenomenal. But if that dynamic continues to exist where they're like, let's just get McKinnon out there, we'll let Mahomes chuck it. Rashee Rice and Kelsey could certainly be league winners.
What if MVS is the guy you need?
No one wants to live in that reality. It'll be... it'll be very fun. I'm excited to see how these pods shake out. And I believe I saw that regular season payouts will be hitting the accounts tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
What would you guys, there's, we blew most of our available show real estate to talk baseball mania, which I don't even care. That was fun.
No, this is great.
We got about 20 more minutes left here. Would you guys want to go the best ball playoffs direction, like rip a mitt and talk some of that? Would you want to go the week 15 slate? Would you want to talk some hoops? Where should we go with this?
I would love to talk a little best ball playoffs. I basically, my flight strategy for last night was I entered a ton of drafts before the plane took off, and I just drafted gauntlets for my entire flight home. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like 35 gauntlets in. I feel like I have a pretty solid grasp of kind of where things are at right now, and I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, I saw a tweet from Schefter this morning. I'll pull it up here just to kind of illustrate the dynamics for the playoffs and how wild it is, when we know, right, like the teams that make it in and all of this stuff right now matters a lot to optimal drafting strategy. Schefter says, heading into week 15, 30 teams remain in postseason contention and 24 teams are either in playoff position or within one game of a playoff spot. So, I mean, like there's a ton of viable like stacks and stuff you can build right now. It's almost overwhelming the amount of ways you can go in drafts.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think like this is shocking. I don't think people are being super efficient with it too. I mean, like if anyone didn't watch the leg up, they did a stream last week starting to talk about all this and just about kind of how you're kind of drawing dead if you don't have a team that can field five players for a Super Bowl. And how I think Sacrilegious said that 22% of entries last year did not do that. Which is just an absurdly high number. And even then, I think that people are really drafting by their like eye and what they think or the players that they know versus just kind of real odds and like percentage chances, which I think means that there's a lot of edge to be had.
For sure. And I mean, even right now too, like how do you handle Tyreek Hill? I mean, I know he's listed day to day, but not even that, right? I mean, the Dolphins were on this trajectory where they might have had the bye. I've started to grow very skeptical of this team even being a legit Super Bowl contender, you know, and then they go and drop a game at home to Will Levis, and you just see they have nothing behind their big four skill position players. I mean, this is a team that, I mean, if Tyreek Hill were to miss a game, I mean, they're just dead. They go from one of the most interesting teams to just like a near Patriots level roster very quickly.
It was pretty disgusting last night when he was out. And
it was tough.
I mean, there's a, man, who was it that had the tweet that was like, you know, the screenshot of the underdog NFL notifications. That's like every Dolphins game. It's like Tyreek, like Jalen Waddle to like the medical tent, Tyreek Hill to the medical tent, Tyreek Hill back in the game, Tyreek Hill to the medical tent. It's like, oh my God, man, every game this dude gets hurt and comes back. But yeah, he, I don't know. Not great.
Do you guys find, because one thing, you know, I was making, you know, bits and memes about it last year with unstacked Brock Purdy. The price on Brock Purdy is a lot different now than it was on him last year. But do you guys find yourself, I've found myself wanting to push up quarterbacks a little bit more. One, because of obviously like the snipe stuff and how hard it is to build a legitimate Super Bowl type matchup. But also too, just because there are, I mean, only a few, I don't know, maybe I'm being short-sighted, but it does really feel like there's only like four or five teams that can realistically make the Super Bowl.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at like odds to be in the conference championship game, I guess, no, it's to win the conference championship game. There's only like, essentially five teams. There are only five teams that have more than a 20% chance to do that.
Yeah.
And so it's like Baltimore and Kansas City are basically double the odds of the next team. Baltimore and Kansas City, at least right now, are about even at around, you know, 32, 34%. And then you have Miami at 16, and then The next highest one is Buffalo, who only has a 45% chance to even make the playoffs. So it kind of feels like you just need to be drafting Baltimore and Kansas City. Basically, the way that I've been handling a lot of that is I've just been really, really hammering. To me, it's like a big five of those two teams in the AFC and then San Francisco, Dallas, and Philadelphia in the NFC. And then trying to fill in the gaps with the teams who I think people are overlooking because they're not sexy, but they will probably play at least one, if not two rounds, like the Browns. Like, I've been doing a ton of last three rounds. Like, if I'm taking Purdy, they're at the point now where I feel like I need to be drafting a second quarterback with Purdy. And so I'll take Joe Flacco and Amari Cooper and Jerome Ford and like, awesome.
I think that, do you know what, when I was looking at the futures market that was still blowing my mind, the Cowboys Super Bowl odds were still, I think they were at plus 750 when I looked yesterday, which was the same as the Chiefs. There were, you know, four or five teams ahead of them. That one seems weird to me because they're like one of three to four teams that I actually think can win the Super Bowl. I actually went and bet that because I was like, the Cowboys at plus 750. And I know that what they have is they have to go through the Niners, you know, and that makes their chances of getting there harder. But if I'm reducing it to a single game sample size, if like that's what's preventing those odds and it's just getting past there, it's like, I'll take Dallas on a neutral field over anyone in the AFC right now.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that honestly, from the drafts I did today, I did more mittens today than anything else. I think my favorite team to draft was actually the Eagles, just because I feel like they actually like slid kind of hard. What felt impossible a couple of days ago of like a full on Eagles stack now feels very possible. And also the odds that they actually aren't the one seed are a lot better. And so that's one where I like feel pretty good about it. Same with the Cowboys. I like them a lot. And Dak is one who I've seen slide more than other quarterbacks. I don't know why. I've literally drafted him in the 50s before, which is like totally insane. But he definitely feels to slide a little bit more than Purdy and Hurts does.
Yep. Man, Minnesota, I saw this in the chat. C. Schefter confirming it. Nick Mullins getting the start here. To me, that still seems crazy to think that Nick Mullins gives you a better chance than Josh Dobbs. I know it hasn't been hot, but isn't that what you're signing up for with the Josh Dobbs experience? There's going to be some real low lows and there's going to be some real high highs. It's like the Ryan Fitzpatrick stuff, right? He might throw three interceptions, but he might also lead you to a come from behind victory and throw four TDs. To me, starting Nick Mullins is just like wrapping the condom on and saying goodbye to any actual playoff run chances.
Yeah, I don't get it. It feels like a throw in the towel moment. I mean, we'll say that one thing that Dobbs seeing, and you know, it's like he does seem to like sputter out after like he's like better in these environments where he hasn't like had time with these teams. Like early on in the Arizona run this year, he was like pretty good early on, then fizzled out. Same thing. He was like, you know, he looked like the next Tom Brady out there week one of Minnesota. And then now teams have tape on him and that offense, and it's a little different. So I don't know. But I agree. I don't see how Mullins could be a better chance. The same thing with like the Zach Wilson situation. Like, play Zach Wilson. Why go the whole Tim Boyle route and stuff? It's the same combo there too.
It does look like my instincts, though, at least by these ELO stuff, not that that's the end all be all, but Cowboys there third. And I believe they were, as of yesterday, like sixth or seventh in the futures markets, though, to win the Super Bowl. So definitely some value there at plus 750. Andy, when you were doing your drafts, have you been... are you letting drafts come to you, or are you in the point right now where you're trying to grab some specific like AFC, NFC combos?
It kind of depends. I've gotten enough drafts under me where now I need to start really tracking my combos, what teams I have kind of against each other. The way that I wanted to do it was kind of do the first, you know, fourth or fifth of them, just take what I get and see where it kind of comes and then massage around that after the fact. But I find it's just really easy to get like two San Francisco players on your team and just feels like, why would I not want to do this like almost every time? And so that's something that I've definitely found myself doing a lot. I think it's interesting. You have a couple teams that are like very, very highly concentrated. like the Eagles, it, you know, like drafting Quez Watkins just feels truly awful. Versus drafting with the Kansas City Chiefs, you can kind of like, you can just like take Mahomes, grab Rashi Rice, and then just like take a couple wide receivers at the end, and try to get a stronger, you know, opposing team stack. But yeah, so it kind of depends what quarterback I get to, where it's like, if I have a quarterback where it's a super concentrated offense, I'm going to just go and get my guys. If it's like the Ravens, I will take Nelson Agholor in the last round every single time someone lets me, which is like pretty often. And so,
One point that Sacrilegious has made, and I think it's especially true for right now, maybe this changes once like the playoff picture is really firmed up, but like the whole unique combo thing early on is just so silly to like worry about, just because so much is getting shuffled up every single week. And I know people were even be like, oh, CMC with Purdy. And it's like, well, then some people were getting those and some people weren't. It's like this stuff is going to get shuffled around so much that I do think, like, obviously you care about that team level correlation. But I'm not worrying too much yet about the combos. I think that's the fun stuff to worry about once the playoffs are settled, ADP sticks. And then you start saying, hey, the majority of the field is getting funneled to these combos, specifically if we get some time box contests, right? Like if one of these fills, and then, you know, between the regular season ending and the start of playoffs, you get a new contest where everyone's getting anchored to that ADP. That's when that stuff, I think, becomes interesting.
How much more are you guys considering like the strength of a team's defense in a playoff contest versus like, you know, the regular season we're often like, well, the team has a weak defense, it's better because they're going to get pushed and stuff. But I feel like there's might be some correlation or like some thought to like a team with a shitty defense that sneaks into the playoffs is likely, you know, probably more likely to not even bounced earlier on and therefore not advancing. Is there anything to that, or is that just kind of a silly aside?
I'm not thinking about that too much, except for the case that I think the Browns are legitimately very good. Their defense is so good that they can win a first round. Like, to me, they're like, it looks like right now will probably be what the Browns and the Jaguars playing in the first round. And like, I'm super happy to bet on the Browns in that. Like, where the Jaguars are going significantly higher and you have to compete to get some of their best players, you can just have whoever you want from the Browns team. And that's one where I think their defense is good enough that they could play two games because of it. So that's really the only time that I think about it.
Because I think like it's just interesting, like the Jags feel fraudulent, the Lions feel kind of fraudulent, like all those things. So I don't know.
All right, let's get some of these ideas on their feet. Let's do a mitten draft to wrap up. I just hopped in one here. It looks like we've got two spots left if anyone wants to join. Influencer 101, baby. It does the 101. I mean, this was the same in Miami over the weekend. It was like, holy cow, the 101 feels like such a cheat code. Obviously, CMC had a bit of a muted game overall, but still, like, also in this contest right now, the CMC stuff feels very nice.
Oh, Pete, can I send you 250 to joint?
Wow. How about this, Clay? How about you don't send me 250? And I just give you a little equity split out of the goodness of my heart.
You're a good guy. Just wanted to make it above board. You know, that virtual.
I would never pull the chess Liam here and make you just remind me to name it after.
Have the pizza party.
Also, go Birds. Everyone, I always get comments every week about why I stream out of a closet. That's the New York lifestyle. Not enough space.
Yeah.
So I am going to take down some of the things that make it very clear that I'm in a closet. And so then I'll just be in a small room, but it'll still be a closet.
I mean, real audiophiles know that a closet is a GTO spot for recording.
Yeah. I can't call that one though, because my several hundred dollar microphone is unplugged sitting over here and I'm using my AirPods. So I don't get to use the audiophile.
oh, there you go. Playing. When I was back when I did that podcast Fantasyland and I was doing the voiceover stuff, I was working with it on Karain and he was like saying my audio was too echoey. And so I started to go into our pantry in our kitchen to record stuff. And I'd be like shoving myself in there. It's like so tight. I'd be setting up the fucking mic right next to the pasta shells and trying to do my voiceover into it. But yeah, you know, the audio is pretty good in there.
I played in a band in high school, and before we ever booked like any like studio time, we just were doing like basement recordings. We literally set up like a, we did a pop mic and did like a clothes hanger and put pantyhose on it over the microphone, and we're in a closet and we went and got like foam and put on the sides, like real, you know, back in the day shit. So
look at our guy Alejandro here sponsoring this draft for us. Thank you, Alex, underdog legend. Always out there grinding here. Yes, PD pasta shells. That feels like a bit man should have done, putting the panties over the mic as his pop screen.
That's free game there. Bring it back.
All right. No Brock Purdy with CMC, as I was told. That is now impossible. But we will have some options here, Clay. We'll see if George Kittle sticks around for us, because then otherwise we're out of Niners, basically.
Oh, that's all right. I think we're still.
Yeah, every once in a while, when I plug my nose and I take Kittle Elijah for sure. Mitchell or John or.
I wouldn't mind building out Ravens, people. Pete.
I was personally. Just gonna say Kittle Lamar seems fun.
Yeah,
to
that's
me.
My that's that would be by far what I would take here. So let's don't mess up the ADP. I like that. I love that move, Pete. By the way.
Oh, I'm always very respectful of the market.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, what you're doing there, Clay, is you're doing yourself, your future self, a favor.
That's right.
Because if you push up Lamar Jackson too much, all these other CMC teams, you know, you're going to box yourself out of that in the future. You got to maintain the integrity.
Sharp, baby. Mm.
Andy, what have you started with here?
Oh. I started with a classic Mahomes Kelsey.
I've heard of it. Shout out to GME holder who is in the Dog Bowl Live Final. He's a ship chasing Discord guy. I felt so bad for him. I initially didn't feel bad for him because he got Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes in the Dog Bowl, which in a 12 person is pretty tough to do. He pulls that off, and then that lateral play ended up costing him $10,000 the way that shook out. Kadarius Toney's toe. Costing $10,000 to GME. So I don't think he's going to be stacking up Mahomes, Kelsey, and mini drafts going forward.
I double down, baby.
Yeah.
Run it back.
Interesting. I've been in here to go for the 2QB.
Yeah. And also, like, I see pointing out, like, if the draft ended right now, or sorry, if the playoffs started right now, you'd have two teams with buys. Like, I'm just completely content with how many weeks do we have to go? 4 weeks. I'm drafting every single team. Like, my quarterback doesn't have the bye week.
Yep. I'm with you.
We can adjust when we get closer and we have more information, but now is the time to draft super teams that you might not otherwise be able to get.
No, if anything, it would be like the last pick. We decide that we have a better chance of like pushing a really sexy team through for something versus like a last piece that might catch a few points here, but we'll see. I think we got to try to stack it up a little bit, Pete, here.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
We have Zay, which is nice.
Yeah, we have Zay.
For sure.
Okay, if we can't get, I mean, do we want to, like, yeah, go ahead, talk it out.
No. I was thinking the other thing at this point. Like, is Keaton Mitchell probably not coming back to us?
That I was just gonna say, let's just lock it up, because I think if we're trying to build it out, like, we go that route, I don't see the advantage of doing anything else. I think if we have to pick another NFC team, because we're not going to get any more Niners that are really viable if we wanted to do that. But it's like, are we going to take Miami guy? I don't really want to take Amon Ra.
I think it would be Amon Ra if we just want to get as many points in as possible. Like, if we're worried the Niners are on... Would you want to do a Detroit as our second team? Let's do that because we have a second out.
Yeah.
I don't think I like Keaton a lot. I don't think Gus is that different. Just like a correlated bet that we're making.
Right, and touchdowns. Like, Gus Bus has definitely shown that he can get those.
Lions still have, and you know, Lions have a 98% chance to make the playoffs. So that's not like some flyer. You know, you're going to be getting one of the few guys that could advance you out of there. And the other thing too, is the Lions have some other nice picks down the road. If we want to grab our second, or another piece from them.
Yeah. I definitely don't mind the Lions as like my secondary team. It's just like hard to imagine. Like they're going to play either they play one of the Cowboys or Eagles. Oh, no, they would win the division, so they'll have a home game.
Yeah. But just to like, so when I was doing a couple gauntlets last week, you know, Amon-Ra was going, I want to say two rounds higher. And it's like their playoff chances haven't really changed. It's just he had a dud game. And so I think you're kind of just getting a little recency bias discount there, which trust me, like I'm down on the Lions right now too, but he's going to be in the playoffs. What did you do?
Vinny just double tapped both Baltimore. Running back.
Yeah. I guess that is the risk if someone's trying to build out their love that. I mean, I don't love having two quarterbacks. I don't like having
I personally would not be doing the same draft that Vinny is doing.
No.
Or Viney.
I would not either.
Vinyl. Oh, it's Vinyl Blues. That's what it is.
Shout out Vendog though. But we could get a little
here's what Smush does,
but
No, we'll get one of these because if we play our NFC teams. We don't need a Baltimore running back because we play a Baltimore, San Francisco, or Baltimore, Detroit Super Bowl and get the running backs through those.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so definitely Montgomery.
Yeah.
And then I'm good with either Laporta or this OBJ resurgence is real in my book. It feels a little weird.
He had 10 targets.
I mean, yeah, he's looked great out there. So
I don't mind pushing the Detroit piece, right? Because there's even some fun like one-off flyers. Like you could do the Reynolds, the Khalif Raymond thing late with those guys.
Yeah, let's get Odell. I just feel like Bateman's really taking a backseat. Not saying that he can't have a nice little run here, but currently I'm way more bullish on Odell than Bateman.
Yeah, he's playing well. And I don't even mind kind of like giga stacking this side. I mean, how many we're at? Three Ravens. We'll see what's available to us. I mean, Vinny, the other thing, Vinny has one wide receiver right now. Like the way this is structured too, it is you need wide receiver tight end firepower. Because you're starting three. Other teams I'm saying are going to be starting three. I guess at max you have to start two, but to draft your seventh or your one of your starters in the seventh round doesn't feel good.
Yeah. You know,
just don't the other thing, I guess the question is, Clay, do we, because we have two Niners, we have two Detroit, and we have three Ravens, do we introduce a fourth AFC team here, or we do more of like a 6-2-2, or like do we rip it in or sorry, like a 4-3-3 kind of thing?
Yeah, from my experience playing like NBA playoff best ball and previous years of NFL playoff best ball, like I think we're making a bet that the Ravens go the distance on the AFC side, and we should be able to fill a starting lineup should the Ravens get a first round bye with our NFC teams. And then just like, I don't think we draft another AFC team. I think if anything, we would take a one-off NFC player or just keep trying to stack out the Lions, or I don't know if there's any, like particularly Jawan Jennings or something who is, you know,
I think we definitely take Jameson here.
I agree with that.
What is the latest on Mark Andrews? Are people still keeping a candle on
him? I thought he was done.
People are still drafting him, but I don't really get
it.
Yeah. I'd rather take Likely than Andrews, but
Likely's gone. So our guy Vinny double tapped Ravens again. Yeah.
God damn.
I mean, I really like Aguilar as a last round Ravens guy.
Okay. Do you want to just do Juwan and get our third Niner here?
Let's play for
so now we have three Niners, three Lions, and three Baltimore. What is there even left in the Baltimore stuff? Yeah, I don't mind the Justice Hill or the Aguilar. I mean, Justice Hill, I believe, had more snaps than Keaton Mitchell last week. And so if he's already there in a three-way timeshare, and then on top of that, you bake in some contingency upside if one of those other backs get hurt, I don't mind taking Justice Hill either. Watch Vinny. Do it, Vinny. Take Justice Hill, you coward. Corner the entire Ravens backfield.
Then dog. Justice Hill and McKinder will be useful. Yeah. I feel, I don't know.
George,
I feel like
George Kittle just replied to Rap Sheets Hicks Poland's tweet with Big Dick Nick. The new Kittle's BDN. The best, man.
Zay Jones, right, Cooper Kupp. Wow. Okay.
I'm out. Sheesh. On Vinny's playoff basketball strategy. Oh man.
All right. Andy's got Kelce, Mahomes, Pacheco, Rice.
Can I talk about what's so awesome about the Vinny strategy?
Yeah.
Is he only drafts team in waves. It's like, all right, I get my two Niners. I get my two Dolphins. I get my four Ravens. And then I get my one Jag and my one Rams.
It's so good. I like
Andy's. Clay, who do you like more, Justice or Aguilar?
I like Aguilar more personally.
Yeah.
I think his long play / touchdown equity is a little bit higher. The Justice Hill's role also wouldn't be opposed. Is there anything left that we should do? I don't think there's anything I would rather do on Detroit over the Baltimore stuff. So we just need to build up Baltimore more, right? Because AFC.
What's up?
We just need to build. This pick should be Baltimore from like a structure perspective.
Yeah. I was thinking running back, like if CMC has the bye,
right?
We might just have David Montgomery the first week, which isn't in. But
yeah, let's go Justice. I think from a roster construction, that's smart.
We already took the San Francisco Nelson Aguilar and Juwan Jennings.
That's fair. Yeah. Good point. Juwan Jennings just feels like that player that gets like a touchdown in the playoffs just because it's random as shit. Like,
oh yeah. All right. Our final team here built out what do we end up with here? 4-3-3. So we have Lamar Jackson, Justice Hill, Zay Flowers, Odell Beckham on the Ravens, and then our three on the NFC. We have a CMC. Juwan Jennings and George Kittle. Should have said George Kittle before Juwan Jennings. And then three Lions, David Montgomery, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Jameson Williams. I think structurally a pretty sound.
EDG, baby.
Yeah.
I think this is a beautiful team from a structure perspective real quick, just because like I love having the 3-3 from the same conference, but we have our ideal Super Bowl matchup, and we're hoping that our secondary team is just pushes us through. Like I really, really like the structure of this team.
Yeah. Andy, let the people know what you finished with here.
Yeah, I went with a pretty classic Chiefs stack and then Eagles and Cowboys to fill it in. So I have Mahomes, then I have Pacheco and the backup running backs from both teams. So Gainwell and Dowdle. And then I have Kels, Rice, Goddard, Ferguson, Watson, and Gallup. So with a slight bias towards Dallas. But I've been finding myself in a lot of constructions like this.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Where it's, you know, one team from a conference with their quarterback and then two teams from the other conference.
Yep.
Feel pretty good about this. And I think both.
Who are you, T-Swift?
What is it? Kelce? Kels? I always say Kels. But I think Gainwell and Dowdle are both really interesting options because they both like get looks by themselves, but also they become so much better. If their starter gets hurt, they're like pretty clearly going to just like lock into the starting role, which is nice.
Yeah. All right, dudes, this was fun. I'm sure we will be doing some more of these playoff drafts in our future here on the club. Anything else you guys want to hit on here before we power this down?
No, congrats to all the advancing teams. Happy advance day.
Yeah. Enjoy. I highly recommend that site. I'll drop it in the show notes. I know a lot of you sickos are already well aware of it, but bbmdb.com leaderboard. And he continues to ship some new features. I think a fun one might be if you could search for your teams without specific players, you know, with how many injuries we have, like show me all of my non-Justin Herbert and CJ Stroud teams, you know, stuff like that. These guys that are no longer interesting. Great site, great work by PD. Appreciate you guys hanging.
The buddy list was really funny.
Buddy list, yeah.
And you two were my top buddies. So shout out to the club.
There you go. Yep. You know, friends and family drafts, you got to do it. And also if you guys want some more Dog Bowl recap stuff, I know the Badge Bros did a show on that earlier today. Go check them out. As always, we'll see you guys next Tuesday here for the club presented by Underdog Fantasy. Until next time, peace.